Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Benjamin.
And today we're talking about how to have productive model evaluation conversations, like how to really structure your discussions when you're looking at War Room, when you're dojoing with your buddies, or like really sizing up a new idea, a new model, whether it be in CID or a recent release, or like dusting something off, like how to actually have that be productive. And this is something I've caught in, you know, my own discussion and development over the last little while. Is it's very reflexive and easy to go into a this model is good, this model is bad kind of mentality, and I catch myself doing that all the time. But one of the difficulties with that framework of evaluation is it doesn't ever give you anything outside of what you already know, versus how you have conversations that develop innovative new list ideas are structured totally differently. And for me, what I've seen is the question starts not with is this good, is this bad, but how do you get this to work?
So I always start out with my model evaluations based on what the artwork looks like, and I assume unreasonable expectations. I then immediately pre-order everything because I'm the best sort of customer. It then arrives and it sits around unbuilt until it occurs to me I own the model and maybe I should play with it.
And then you complain about it on Facebook?
No. Then I build it, lose terribly because I'm dumb, and then I complain about it on Facebook.
Hashtag ret Facebook group?
Yeah. So that's my model life cycle. Eventually, I may decide that I do or do not like a model in a particular list, but most of my models sit abandoned and sad and alone in my case.
Yeah.
So, as a quick aside, going back to the ret Facebook group, trolls were widely considered like the worst faction of the last year, right? The trolls Facebook group wasn't a fraction as whiny as the ret Facebook group is, and it boggles my mind. Like, if you're a faction that's just getting like curbed, like how about you try and figure out how to make things work instead of having 1,000+ comment posts about how your faction is bad and how Privateer Press needs to fire its designers.
Well, you don't understand, though, because people got into ret because it was like Signar Privilege, but with elves, and everyone likes that.
Oh, wait. So you're saying they're white Signar?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, like, there is something to that context, and I think, like, you know, the Retribution community complaining about stagnation, how their models aren't very good, they're all operating inside of that paradigm where they've already made up their minds. And, you know, any execution, any testing they do is just going to be evidence seeking for that conclusion, versus if they like start in an active inquiry about pieces, they'll actually start to see, okay, what does it take for this to work?
Didn't they get a whole truckload of models at this time last year?
Yeah, but they didn't go through CID, and they're very unhappy about their themes, which is entirely valid because, like, I mean, there's certain factions that just have themes that are less exciting than others.
Like
it would be as if, like, Trolls had four factions that were on par with Creel Company.
Yeah. Well, that's, like, so... I find myself constantly drifting between conversation one, like, this is bad, and conversation two, how do we make this work? And then asking, is this good or bad once you've figured out how to make it work? I find myself drifting between those two conversations when looking at Kador's theme forces. And, you know, I often get really salty and come from conversation one. But it's also because I've spent a lot of time trying to answer this question, how do you make this work? And like, okay, there's a couple of paradigms that can do it. There's a couple of things that kind of work. But honestly, like, I hit that last question at the end of conversation two, is this actually effective or not? And I switched factions because Kador's themes are not good. Like, I have to spend a lot of time and energy, like, really spinning my tires to actually get anything, whereas I could go on to something else. I think if the ret community is coming from conversation one, yeah, they'll be constantly miserable. if they say, okay, what can we do that works? What we're doing already isn't working, so how do we change that up to have something that works? And then say, okay, is this effective or not? Once they've actually played it, then you probably switch factions, but your complaint about how bad your faction is gets sidelined because you're just being effective now.
And there's absolutely zero way we're going to draw flack for this episode, by the way. just calling out Rhett directly.
Well, also what's interesting, though, is that that actually plays a lot into the current analysis of whether a model is any good or not. Because one thing I've been noticing is that for certain factions, you just get free solos like it's going out of stylo. And you can pretty much choose anything you want in all the themes you're bothering to take. So I've noticed that certain models come out for certain factions, and you would never pay 6 or 7 points for the thing, right? Like, at its official cost, it's a total waste of time and money. However, if it's free, it's amazing. And it becomes a very different conversation whether you're looking at the model, you know, if it's effectively a model that you may have bought at 4 points, but it costed it 6, and you're like, 6 points seems hard to justify. But suddenly it's free, you're like, you know, at 0 points, this model is very interesting to me. Which I think has been the case with a couple of the new releases, where I looked at the model in a vacuum and went, it doesn't seem cost-effective compared to Solo X, who already existed, has the same effective role, and I'm only taking one Solo in that position, essentially. Like with Gators, when the new Gators shooter guy came out.
Oh, Long Chops?
Long Chops. Love the model, by the way. Like, super excited by it. But his rules, I was like, it's okay. But then I was like, oh, but wait. Unlike the other shooter guys who I could get, he can be free. Makes him vastly more interesting all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, he's just not as good as the other shooter was for the same price. But suddenly, when he's free, you're like, hey, that's 5 totally free points for a guy who's actually pretty good doing what he's doing over in the corner.
And that's a perfect example of finding something that on face value doesn't appeal to you, but finding a context in which it gets you what you want.
Right, right. Exactly. But for me, I think I must have mentioned this in the past, but when Morgul 3 came out, I was super down on him. He doesn't match the style of any of the other Scorn casters. He doesn't like the big Beast Brick style of play. And his feet didn't affect the things I wanted them to affect. And I spent like a month being so down on this caster, like, he's bad, he's bad, he's bad, he's terrible. And it never got me anywhere. There was just this portion of it that I had already determined was dead to me. And then I was at a tournament talking with Zach. You know, he's TOing. We're shooting the breeze between rounds. And, you know, I go into my full-on gripe mode about Morgul 3, like, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't do all these things, and what he's doing doesn't work with how I'm used to running him. And if you wanted him to be effective at all, if you wanted any, like, his feet and these abilities to work, you would need to bring such and such kinds of units. And then if you do all this and execute in such a way, maybe it will work. And I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty viable. This actually, like, now that we've actually gone through and said what it is, I think I'm going to pick him up and try this. And it was like, yeah, you got to play a lot of warriors. You probably got to play warriors with high power and ranged weapons, like RQREI or Reavers. And I'm like, oh, okay, this army actually works.
So I think part of the problem for a lot of players might be that they're coming from the perspective of they're trying to play a fantasy. They want to play this caster and this idea.
That is nail right on the head.
They're not trying to play the game to solve a problem. They're trying to play the game to role play a faction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you get locked into that, and you're basically saying, I'm going to try and play this tiny, tiny, tiny subset of what is out there, and it needs to be competitively viable, a large chunk of people are going to be very disappointed. Because not everything can be, like, perfectly flat unless everything's homogenous, and then you just have chess and there's no role-playing, except maybe your pieces are fancily painted.
You know, I have the soundtrack to that, and there was a lot of role-playing.
The wink doesn't come through on
One
the
night in Bangkok makes a hard man humble.
I think that's, like, dead on the money and hits on something that is a stumbling block for a lot of people. Like, you can be perfectly happy role-playing your faction and playing that fantasy and not achieve, like, competitive results, but it's what you're after. I actually find the Kador community somewhat difficult to engage with because there's a lot of people who are into it and very vocal in the Kador groups are into the role-play aspect. And, like, every time I see just axe to face and, like, Russia blah, 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 it's like, okay, but that doesn't actually work. Like, the axe to face thing doesn't achieve results. But I could have that conversation with you, but you're not going to care because it's not what you're it's not the experience you're after. You're not looking for development. You're looking to play out that fantasy. I also think, and it's not just in people who have a more casual disposition, I think you also saw this, like, it's really easy to point to in Mark II because there were certain kinds of strategies that didn't work. They kind of work now, which is a little unfortunate, but, like, unbreakable defensive bricks, like, that just go up the middle of the table, your opponent's army washes over them, and then, you know, you just eat them. And then you re-brick.
Miserable meat mountain.
I'm not going to go into a technical discussion of why that wasn't that, but...
Ginger meat mountain?
Or the other one was, like, defensive gun lines. Gun lines that advance once, maybe even fall back a little bit, and just shoot at range and shoot at range and shoot at range. And people were trying to play these things competitively, but the state of the game at the time was such that this strategy does not work. It's either not tough, like, it's fundamentally not tough enough, or doesn't work on scenario, or doesn't do enough damage. And I saw a lot of people stalled, like, I just want to play the game this way. And it's like, but the way you want to play the game doesn't work.
And I think that's a bit of a disconnect for a lot of people. I personally, I think that all the factions are very close together. Like, the worst faction compared to the best faction is that the worst faction has some must-dodge matchups. Mm-hmm. That, like, you have to accept some must-dodge matchups in any given pair. And so there can be some kind of pain points where you're basically trying to gamble on avoiding things in the context of a tournament. Whereas top tier factions, if you want to call them that, they don't really have much must dodge matchups. They have a game into literally everything, and they have a couple of things that are slam dunks.
Let's have a quick discussion about the salt soup of the internet here. One thing that I highly advise, unless it's coming from us, is to take any advice or opinions about models on the internet with a tremendous amount of skepticism, because mm-hmm. I have seen many people / subcommunities demonize or poo-poo, if you
demonize? Will. Is that because you think the daemon is bad?
No, because I played a lot of GW back in the day, and when they changed the word to daemon, I always thought it was hilarious rather than demon.
They were huge Good Will Hunting fans.
Yeah. So people will call out a model as just being bad, period. Don't buy it. Don't touch it. Don't play with it. But your mileage may vary. I mean, I've seen people make lists with models that were universally considered trash and do quite well with them because that model fulfilled the role that list needed and wanted. So you really have to look at the model sort of for your own interests. And you're going to have some models that really don't work out necessarily, depending on what the meta is. There's nothing wrong with the model sometimes. They just don't fit what you're playing into, which is a different problem. But it's not necessarily that the model's bad. I mean, I've had plenty of lists I've built that just got raffle stomped because I misjudged where that tournament meta was. And there was nothing wrong with my list per se. It's just I had no answer for where people had switched to. Yeah. But it doesn't mean the models I was bringing were bad. I mean, you could argue that I was bad at making decisions. But, you know, that's a whole different problem. And the other thing is that people get attached to models because you spend time modeling and painting them, right? And, you know, I like the figures that Privateer Press makes for the most part, and I enjoy, you know, the artwork on a lot of the factions, and so I can understand that people, like, want to make their little gribbly dude they painted up, like, cool and do something. But, you know, if you're trying to be a competitive player, and this is what we're obviously trying to address with this, is that you just need to sometimes, you know, like, if you were playing a Magic card game, sometimes you just take the card out and never go back to it. You're like, eh, my Skinner's never going to get his money back, and I just got to give up on him.
Yeah, like, so for the last year, I've been playing a lot of Doomy 2 and have had a lot of success with him, but but I'm not trying to force him in my pairs. Like, you don't see me, like, rolling up to LVO or anything with Doomy when the meta just doesn't make sense for him. Like, I'm playing other things because I'm trying to make trolls work as a faction. And I think every faction can play to any given meta right now. I don't think there's... Maybe there's some kind of like bizarro meta where there's a faction that leans a bit too heavily on elemental attacks and there's just too much elemental immunity, which I think is why they're making the change in CID. We'll see where that goes. But like,
I don't know who, like, you could be referring to.
If you're like hellbent
ones, there's ones that are doing the boning and that's Signar, and there's ones that are getting boned and that's Protectorate.
And minions. Minions, like over a barrel.
Unless your game plan, like your faction's game plan, revolves a bit too heavily around certain things that are tech outable. Like, let's imagine you were a faction that leaned very heavily on incorporeal, and then all of a sudden the meta just naturally has magic attacks in every list, and incorporeal is your defensive, like, tech. Like, you're gonna fall apart. But I don't think those really happen all that much.
No, they don't.
Like, even at the height of, like, Crick's, like, and you needing to have RFP, like, it wasn't even necessarily enough to, like, hate them to the point where they stopped being viable. And you can argue that they were overtuned, which, in my opinion, they were.
I agree, yeah.
But I think that there's no amount of excessive RFP that necessarily would have made Ghost Fleet unplayable.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was an overtuning thing, but like, that is exactly the kinds of questions you need to be asking in any discussion to actually come to like productive or usable conclusions. Like, I can't hammer this home hard enough. If you skipped straight to judgment, you will not get anything that's beyond what you know already. If you actually, like, you know, stay in an inquiry the entire time, that's actually how you start to unlock, like, you know, a deeper understanding or achieve new designs or results. Like, it's a total context shift. And Ben, something you mentioned, which in either discussions or podcasts, there was actually a time where I was consuming literally every War Machine podcast that would come out, like every single one.
Good God.
this was like 2013, 2014, so the volume wasn't quite as high, but
so I listened to a fair amount of podcasts, but like, I can imagine listening to all of them, especially because there's a huge variance in like audio editing quality. Like, there are certain podcasts that I just straight can't listen to because of how like bad the audio is. Like, it's like distracting, and I can't work and listen to a podcast if it's like that low quality.
Yeah, Dark Guidance kills me for that. Like, they have interesting discussions, but boy, do they sound bad.
Oh man, calling out Rhett, the entire Rhett community calling out Dark Guidance. Anyone else?
There's got to be somebody.
Well, anyway,
like, I don't agree with all of Jay's opinions.
Was that Pagani guy? Jeez.
Anyway, like, the thing
pickles
I wanna,
taste bad.
The thing I want to get
okay,
at
now
is,
we're gonna have a fight.
I was sitting there consuming all these podcasts, but I wasn't just like listening to it. I was sitting there with my phone, looking at War Room, like checking everything, investigating like the math, thinking about the implications, and like, especially for a podcast like Chain Attack, they put a lot of stuff out there, but don't delve deep into the reasons why. And in order to be substantially informed by what they're saying, you need to be having the inquiry following along. Otherwise, you will just have statements handed down to you. And if you relate to them as like true without getting the underlying logic, they won't be useful to you. They'll actually get in your way.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, this comes from somebody who spends a lot of time immersed in War Machine. Like, even when I'm not playing, like, I haven't played for like the last week or two just because my car's been in the shop. But like, I do a lot of just like War Machine card reading and stuff like that, and I feel like I have a good mental picture of how the game is. So when I listen to Chain Attack, they don't need to get deep because they can just keep on skipping from topic to topic to topic mm-hmm. for me, and like, I don't necessarily need that depth.
Right.
Because like I feel like I have a comfortable understanding of things, and there's things I agree with and there's things I don't agree with, but it's not like I feel like they aren't going deep enough for me to understand things, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing, and I think, Ben, you're exactly right about grain of salt. Like, you need to actually look, do the people talking about this have skin in the game that they're playing? And two, like, do you understand the logic of what they're saying and why they're saying it? I'll give some examples. Like, when the Aridus Sentinel came out in Mark II, listen to a lot of podcasts. It was the talk of the town. Everybody loved this beast. And everybody who was talking about it, there were very few Scorn players that were talking about it. And literally every podcast that talked about it dramatically inflated its damage output. Like, there was this picture of it doing much more damage than it actually does, and the numbers that people were giving were just flat incorrect.
Was it against you or someone else where I had Sevi, it would have been Sevi 1 back then, almost just straight die to blast damage from one of those things?
That would not be me. But
that was like one of the most, like, oh god, that scared the shit out. I think he left me on like two boxes with blast damage, and I was scared something less for the rest of Mark II by those Sentinels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember. I think that was probably Scott when he was still playing regularly with the, yeah, because he loved the double artists, and
he loved trying to make Scorn shoot.
Well, he was rocking, because I can't remember who it was, but he had double artist shooter guys, not the warrior guys. The one of the snipe. Shooter,
Raiders.
Yeah, the Raider. I'm really great with names, as you can tell. And he had two of the Extoller guys for the puppet strings. And I remember going into that with multiple lists and thinking to myself, like, I see what he's trying to do, but the entire list falls apart as soon as you engage it, because he didn't have enough screening or enough counterpunch to keep the list unengaged.
Well, yeah, you just kill things before they can engage you.
Right, but it didn't necessarily work that well.
You just kill things before they engage you.
Yeah. And I just remember, like, it was funny, like, continuously going into him, because I was playing Mercs at the time, and I remember my McBane list with the little knifey guys was the seriously the worst thing he could possibly see across the table, because I would just run in having feated and they wouldn't go away. And it was super funny to me. I don't think he had as much fun as I did.
That's actually a good example of you solving a problem. You saw that this list could do a lot of damage, but if you could engage him, you would have a really strong game into him. And then you played a list that would be able to deliver consistently. And I don't remember if McBane was considered all that good in Mark II. He was like okay, but he like when I think of like Mercs in Mark II, I think like Exelon Thexis, I think like Dwarf Colossal Shenanigans.
Unfortunately, because I'm terrible with names, there was that one guy who took McBane to the top three at LVO that one year, 2015, I think.
Jordan Knack, yeah.
Yeah, Jordan. Jordan was running a mean McBane list. He's actually what got me back into playing, because I always like McBane, because you can just go, McBane! And that alone is worth playing.
Your loose cannon McBane.
Watching him play McBane at LVO, because I was sort of burnt on Crix at that point, having run them through a bunch of tournaments, and I was flip-flopping in Legion. I was like, wait, I own all those models. Like, I'm going to go back to Mercs for a little bit here. And I had a blast with him. Like, he was a very interesting caster. And then there was the Damiano, like, El Stupido list, where you just couldn't hit any of the crap with the
Wrong Eye, Snapjaw, Chaozzi.
Yeah, Chaozzi. But the Chaozzi Eliminators, not the Assassins. I mean, it was just a crazy good list for like stymieing your opponent, and the little steelhead riflemen, because they had that great ability. So yeah, I mean, it was you know, that was a lot of fun at the time. I haven't played Big Pain in Mark III, to be honest. So
yeah, that is like when you are, you know, hearing opinions put forward, like you do actually have to do some investigating, like Knack actually having an effective McBane list, and you actually like get past the initial judgments and valuations and watch it play, and like, this is an effective strategy. I actually like this.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it doesn't appear on paper, but you do your homework and you look for how can it be made to work.
Another resource, which I'm assuming a lot of our listeners know, because if they're listening to the podcast, they're pretty tapped in, but DGI's tournament site. to mm-hmm. give a positive shout out to Jay this episode. whenever I'm trying to make a warlock work, like sometimes I'll be looking at a certain problem caster and I'll be like, maybe this warlock can solve it. What have people been able to successfully pilot this into? And another important part of that is you have to look at how old that tournament result is. And if you've been playing for a while, try and get an understanding of what the meta was at that point so you can understand what kind of changes you're going to need to make to solve your current problem.
Yeah, I agreed 100%. Yeah. You have to have like a picture of what the meta was like, what this is for, and how it operates. There's actually like an analogy, because some lists, when you see them, just look like an incoherent mess. Like, how does this work? But when it's played, it operates in a way that you weren't necessarily expecting and achieves tremendous results. I'll give like an analogy. Like, if your paradigm for weapons is sword, like straight rigid thing that you just swing, like everything occurs to you in that paradigm and that makes sense. You see a flail just sitting there, it doesn't make any sense. But if you use it in this specialized way, it does a crap load more damage than you would even anticipate from this non-rigid thing.
I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain flails are like one of the least historically efficient weapons. Like, they only worked against heavy armor, and then they only kind of worked.
Well, so let's be clear that there's two different types of flails in medieval European armories. There were the flails, which were effectively farming implements that were weaponized simply because they needed something and you could hit a person with it. And then there were the more ritual objects, which were utilized in knight-on-knight combat, which were designed to bypass shields. None of those were ever used with great efficiency or commonality.
Yeah, so Alex's analogy is just bad.
Well, it's a loose analogy. Like, something you have
wow,
a
paradigm... Are we just going to take the piss out of everything in this episode?
I guess so.
That should be the title. The gang takes the piss out of everything.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's go straight into the Mongpok announcement then.
I'm actually tentatively excited for that. But let's get back on topic so that we can close out this
Wait, we had a topic?
With impunity.
I mean, I think I've gotten everything out there, and I think like you guys have given me a lot.
Well, one thing I will actually say that was very helpful, and of course, again, I'm forgetting the name. What's that site that was posting the lists for the WTC?
Conflict Chamber. Great tool.
Yeah, great tool. But the most insightful thing for me was when I was playing a given faction, I would go look at what other top competitors were submitting for lists. And I would look at models that I didn't have a very high opinion of for whatever reason. And I'd see them in a list, you know, with a person who I knew was a good player. And I was like, all right, what are they doing with that model? Like, why is that model in there? And sometimes the model's in there for their own personal play preferences. But a lot of times, I just didn't necessarily visualize all the interactions. And so then I would grab the model, take that list out and be like, okay, let's see what this list does. Like, where am I going with this list? And does it make sense for me to consider taking this model? And, you know, there's a lot of times where there were some of the support models or some of the other solos that I changed my opinion on because I'd play them with that combination and be like, oh, yeah, that guy adds like a real kicker into certain circumstances that really flips the game state for me. And it's not all the time, but when you really need it, suddenly it helped. And I think that that's a great resource just to look at what people are running into some of these tournaments if they get posted, just to get a feel for, you know, the model selection and see where other people are at. The same thing happened when I saw that Haley 2 list that had Gaston in it. And, you know, it was one of those lists where, like, I knew what he did, but I'd never really thought through adding him into a Haley murder list, even though I played a lot of Haley murder lists. And I was like, huh. And I kind of did the math. I'm like, holy geez, that's actually way better than I was thinking it was. Especially for the distance and the reliability of the damage you were applying to something.
Yeah, turns out when you give Signar a backstab model, it gets nuts.
A range backstab model that can self-boost. Yeah, super good, actually. But it was one of those things where I owned the models. I knew their rules. I just never put those things together as, you know, a value combination before. But in retrospect, seeing it, I'm like, wow, yeah, that's actually something I should have figured out.
But so just to circle it back, I think there's kind of like two ways of thinking about a model or factional selection.
Yeah,
you're either trying to solve a problem or you're trying to build a list that makes a model work. And I think both are entirely valid.
Mm-hmm.
But I think doing that rather than just looking at a straight up down, because there's a lot of things, because the game has a lot of buffing and debuffing going on in it where you're contextually changing things. And so models that might have inferior stats might be easier to deliver, and the like amount of buffs or debuffs you're applying make it so that it doesn't matter. Like if you look at what's it called? Revenant Crew. They don't look so hot on paper. I mean, with Point Blank and Gang, there's some kind of like silly interactions there. But once you start stacking like -7 armor on something,
mm-hmm.
like the math like doesn't matter. You just care about like having stuff that you can repeatedly apply this with, mm-hmm. and that you will deliver eventually. Or they're like, their guns are POW 10 or POW 11, I think.
10.
So like, if you put -7 armor on something, that's POW 17s from them.
Yeah.
Like, so...
Well, I remember I had the same thing with Crix, and this is a Mark II, of course. I'd never given Soul Hunters a lot of shift back then when I was playing Crix. And I remember the first time I took Soul Hunters with a solid debuff caster, and I delivered, and I killed, like, a bucket load of hard targets, and I was like, oh, this is really good. Just because, you know, they shifted from being like a POW 12 to a POW 19 effective. And you're like, oh my, that actually kills things quite effectively.
Oh my. And so a lot of times I think that people are evaluating models either in a vacuum, like just looking at their card and not playing them, or they're playing them and they aren't like really trying to break down what exactly makes them work. Because mm-hmm. I think there's a number of models that like just aren't that great or just contextually aren't that great. And that's fine. Like not everything has to be equal. But I think there's a lot of times where people look at things and they're like playing into bad matchups.
Mm-hmm.
They're not actually giving models the tools for success. Like I think there's a lot of times where if all the things align, like it feels a lot better to play certain models under those, like under that context.
Mm-hmm.
For example, slag trolls. People wrote off slag trolls big time because their gun doesn't really work, but they still have erosion on their melee fist. So whenever I was ADRing Doomy, I'll put them in because if you put rage on them and you feat, they one round Kador heavies.
Mm-hmm. They're 16 weapon masters then?
I think they go up to 17 because of the Creel Stone.
Okay.
And like I even had them like semi reliably with like a bit of spiking one round clam jacks, and like I had basically ignored them from the beginning of Mark III up until like I started like tinkering with them, and I was like, okay, like these guys seem to like be designed to kill heavies. If I apply all these buffs to them, do they feel good to apply? And the answer was yes. Or more recently, the Storm Troll, which I've put in just so that my Warlock doesn't get assassinated by Nemo. The gun's pretty solid, and like you can just throw him off on a flank, and it just doesn't matter. He's just like, okay, I'm going to shoot this thing, which is going to E-Leap into the or Electro Generator, into this thing. And I have E-Leap on my fists if I cast the Animus, so I can just send him into a bunch of infantry with lowish armor. And like it feels good,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. because he contextually makes sense. And so I spend a lot of time like looking at what I need to expect to be afraid of, either in the national meta or locally. And I ask myself, how am I going to solve this? I pretty much never come from the perspective of, I really want to play this model. And if I do, it's because I think the model is insanely good. And I'm just trying to figure out a context in which they can be placed into a pair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kolgrima is obviously a very, very good warlock, but I was having a hard time like fitting her into something that I liked. And so I spent a lot of time like, how do I make her make sense? Because she wasn't working out for me. I was waffling back and forth on whether she could actually be played. And I've settled on a list. I'm pretty happy with her, at least in the current context. We'll see where that goes.
One other thing to note with all of this is that especially now that Mark III with the C80 cycle has become as volatile as War Machine's ever been, Yeah. You have to also be willing to just let go of models that were good, and because of a change either with the Steamroller packet or new casters or a CID that rechanges the balance of models, sometimes you just got to give them up. And I know that can be especially annoying if you're, you know, you have a beautiful painted unit, but it is, if you're competitive, and again, I will stress that this is what we're focusing on with these comments, you just have to take what works and walk away from the things that fall off of that curve.
Well, even if the game wasn't competitive, I think that would be important. Because like the whole concept of balance means that if somebody's like going no holds barred, I'm going to bend things until they break at you. You want things to be limited and you want things to be fair. And just because they're harder to use in like the East case scenario, it's important to the health of the game. And I mean, you can still play these models if you're playing in a less competitive venue. Like right. if you're playing casual, if you're playing a narrative league, the models are still fine. Heck, you could probably even play them in competitive in virtually all cases. Like Denny one's still playable. Like,
well,
you
yeah,
probably
I mean,
won't see her in her exact.
I mean, she's still
list.
A top tier caster. You can't be all Lord. She's still competitive.
And like, how many times have they nerfed Haley and people still make her work? Though, I mean, that's more a function of how powerful TK is. As a
yeah,
spell.
I mean, it's also how powerful temporal acceleration is. Also, how powerful automatic re-rolling. Partial activation yeah. denial is. Also,
yeah,
also,
I mean,
like, you can keep
no,
going.
I mean, she's still ridiculously strong because she just has such a crazy suite. If they took TK from her, I think they would finally remove her from the game if that was her goal. But I mean, it's really TK and the Thorn benefit. But we're not here to delve into the sordid history of Haley. I mean, but it's just one of those things where, I mean, obviously some people approach miniature games in a much more casual fashion. And, you know, it's just, I like to clarify that we're not poo-pooing anything if you're just there to move figures around and enjoy yourself, which the game can do. You know, but some people come from other games where competitiveness is not even an option, but they still enjoy the game. So,
yeah, that's actually really important, too. Like, there's something in there because, you know, you get podcasts and like you actually have to be like watching, you know, doing the inquiry yourself, doing your homework when you're listening to that. You also have to do the same thing for like peer discussion groups, because the criterion for like a faction discussion group is not like, you know, like such and such a record or even such and such a commitment about like the game and competition or role-playing your faction or whatever. It's just enthusiasm for this thing. And, like, that's great. People want different things. They all get to be enthusiastic together. If you're trying to have, like, a structured inquiry or get something competitively, you also need to listen for what do these people want? What are they looking for when they're giving advice and doing their experience? Because some people will persist in saying axe to face. And if you want to role-play the faction, that's perfect advice. If you're looking to up your game competitively, it probably doesn't work as well. But, like, you do need to be, like, paying attention to these things.
And also, unproductive model conversations can be very toxic. Like, I've known people who have basically quit the game because they've gotten so down on their faction because of toxic feedback loops with other people. Where it's like, man, this sucks. Man, the game sucks. Like, blah, blah, blah. I hate Signar. I hate Krix. I hate Legion. I hate Circle. I hate virtually every faction that isn't mine. And it just gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse until somebody realizes that they're really not enjoying the game, which is, I think, in part because these conversations outside the game are poisoning the well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I still think the most classic example of that in War Machine is the thing I always think back to, which is hard to believe for a lot of people, where Haley 2 was considered a bad caster at one point in the history of War Machine. And I know, yeah. It seems crazy to think that. But I remember, because I was playing in, you know, what was a far less broad competitive War Machine scene back then. But I remember when Haley 2 came out, she wasn't obviously powerful, right? Like, she had a suite of spells that didn't hurt anything. She had a feat that was really irritating to play out. And people were kind of like, And I remember because I was competing in that Gen Con Masters where, and I can never remember anyone's name, so I unfortunately don't remember who won this, but he was playing Haley 2. And it was sort of one of those crazy revelations where everyone was like, I was playing Kotor at the time. But I had Signar as my other faction. I think I even had a Darius List with me for one of the, whatever the original Steamroller was, Hardcore, the one with the 7-minute turns or whatever. I had a Darius List for that. But anyway, so I remember, you know, I had, I'd done reasonably well. I mean, I think I got in the top 8 or something of that tournament, but it was one of those escalating points things they used to do back then. So it was, you know, you had tier 1, which was like a single caster. You had tier 2, which is a single caster with like all the points up until the threshold where you got the second caster. So I think it was like 50, 75, or 100, whatever the equivalents were back then.
Yeah, it was 500, 750, right. And then 1,000.
And that got weird though, because like when you hit the 1,000 in the last 8, I had literally no experience running 2 casters at the same time, right? And so I just got totally murdered ball by a guy who had Gatsby 2 and Denny 1. And I was like, yep. Didn't see, like, I kind of like vaguely articulated what was going to happen. And then I was dead. And I was like, oh, yeah, that was better than I thought it was going to be for you. not for me, for you. I mean, it, mind you, I had a lot of fun, though. But it was fascinating because I went and actually then watched the guy playing Haley 2. And I was like, oh, Haley 2, huh? I don't even remember. I don't think I'd even put her on the table at that point. And everybody was like, oh, she's garbage. And I watched this guy just, like, demolish the opponent, like, pull the caster out, murder the caster, pull the other caster out, murder the caster. And you're like, okay, that's a thing. I think, is it Nemo 2 who had the extended threat range with the Jack?
I think that's Nemo 1.
Because I think he was playing Nemo 1 and Haley 2. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful combination, though, because it was like, killed the caster, killed the caster. And you're like, oh. Oh, that's a thing. And then suddenly after that, everybody's like, Haley 2's broken. But it was literally an overnight flip in the community between, like, Haley 2 was pure trash garbage. Wow, you're playing her in a tournament. That's brave. To, she's the most broken model.
Well, a lot of things.
Still living in the shadow of Vlad 2, which is remarkable.
Yeah.
But
a lot of things historically are like that. I mean, Warders.
There were 2 solid years of Warders are garbage.
Pure
don't
garbage.
Play Warders, too.
Don't play them.
Warders are faction-defining and, like, the crux of the game.
Yeah.
Even Ghostfleet, though you can argue part of that is due to the Wraith engine change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that was a lot of it was due to the Wraith engine
also
change.
Also, them having a viable secondary theme, which they didn't really have up until that point. Mm-hmm. But even still, it went from, like, everybody was like, how are you going to crack armor with Revenant crew? And then it's like, please, for the love of God, Privateer Press, nerf this into the ground. This is like hell. Like it basically was like garbage for like a year or so. And then, no, like 6 months. And then Lock and Load rolled around. And Brandon Andrews won that, and he just went on a rampage for the rest of the year. And
yeah, he won like 7 events that year.
Yeah, something crazy. And so there's a lot of times where the community gets it wrong. The only time that I think the community got it super right out of the gate was Tuna. That was the only one I remember where everyone was like, this is unacceptable.
Yeah.
This is broken. Like, you cannot allow this to happen. And like, there was only like a single weekend between model release and nerf, and
it was longer than that.
No,
because she was
pre-release War Machine weekend,
right?
LVO happens, and then
they never. But remember, they didn't nerf her until after the official release date.
Yeah,
that was because she was in circulation because of War Machine weekend for a longer period of time.
Yeah, they literally nerfed her like it was either like it was less than a week. After
but they'd already gotten list commits to LVO, which is why they didn't nerf her before LVO. But I remember at War Machine weekend, there was actually a King of the Hill thing. You remember that in the back corner?
Oh,
where
yeah.
Somebody had grabbed a bunch of Griffins from other people, because nobody had that many Griffins with them, right? And they actually said, bring anyone you want, I'll kill you on turn 3 no matter what, or earlier. And everyone's like, no, that's not true. And every single effing time... And I went into it. I had Kane 2 at the time, before Kane 2 wasn't the worst Kane, when he was the best Kane ever. And I thought, I can do this. Like, I have the ability to kill a bunch of things. Like, I'm super scary. Turn 2, dead. Just dead. Like, it was not even, like, stupid Griffins, you know, like, zing up, come in, murder Kane. I was like, oh. Okay.
So that's actually something. You said that Kane 2 is the worst Kane now. But is... So, and that very well may be true. But with with the new damage increasing guy, I'm blanking on his name.
Falk is just glorious.
With Falk and Kane 2, can you hit a bell curve that now all of a sudden Kane 2 makes sense? Like, so, between Falk, Ayana and Holt, Ragman with a bunch of...
I mean, that's basically the Kane 2 orthodoxy from Mark 2 is just do damage stacking.
Yeah. To be honest, Falk is a ridiculously awesome model. The fact that it's a spray solves having solos hit things problems.
Solves shield guard.
The biggest thing with it, which...
Isn't it a single shot that turns into a spray, or is that just one of the gun modes?
No, his base mode is spray. The other mode is not spray, turns into a spray. The interesting thing, which I didn't realize until I did this in a game, was that the way Falk works is you can spray something and then trick shot from something into that thing you sprayed for POW 12s. And that gets wicked really fast. Because what will happen is that it's very hard to protect from the spray thing, especially since he has Pathfinder and all the other shenanigans, right?
Yeah.
And I did this in a game where I walk up and I sprayed their caster by spraying something in front of the caster, right? Got their caster. You know, you're like, sweet. And then I had Ace and Kane blow his stack on trick shots, and those unavoidable POW 12s meant that that caster just died. And I was like, oh, because the POW 10s, maybe, maybe not. POW 12s, 100%. And I was like, and I hadn't even like thought about that until I was doing it. And I was like, I'm a dick.
You get that fire for effect on Falk. You know he's going to make the shot.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like crazy good. And the other thing was that it was a caster who was in a Artifice of Deviation with dodge. And so, like, literally the scenario for me shooting that caster off the table was really low, except for the fact that spray ignored the Artifact of Deviation and the trick shots didn't care.
And that sounds like a great example of making models work.
Yeah. Now, so, I mean, honestly, I only say Kane 2 is the worst Kane just because the nerf took him from being one of the most stupidly good casters in the game to being just a really good caster.
Yeah, it was one of those, how did this make it through? That was the entire conversation after the card leak to the release of Mark 3, and then for several months after is, how did this make it through playtesting?
Well, I still remember being at Gen Con and putting Kane 2 on the table before the changes and having people literally be like, I think I'm just going to concede because I don't want to play this game. It's not fun. And, you know, it was one of those things where I didn't really feel bad, but I sort of felt bad because it was true. Like, there were certain armies that people were putting on the table because, you know, they were a single faction sort of person, which is fine. But, like, at the time, you know, this was especially true into Crix. Like, they had just Coven, and Kane 2 didn't care about Coven in any way. He's like, I got this. Like, watch me kill the world. And it's understandably very frustrating to put your models on the table and just be a victim. You're like, oh, this is fun.
Game. More hand gestures that don't communicate.
Sorry.
Well on mic.
Yes. I talk with my hands. Just imagine me whipping two pistols across the table.
Those were pistol shooting noises, not some like weird panting.
Yes.
I mean, it is some weird panting, but it's supposed to represent pistol shooting. Yeah.
It's Ben's doing a Yosemite Sam and not tugging a train right in front of his face.
Or
he
both.
Was doing that briefly.
Okay. I think we've gone off the rails. Is there anything that people we want to say to wrap things up?
I think we've dived into every conceivable rabbit hole around this topic.
I think that there's probably some people we haven't insulted yet.
I could say something about Road to War, but I actually really liked Road to War.
So I will tell all the other podcasts out there that I stopped listening to your crap because it was awful on the audio side of things for the most part.
Fight us IRL. You guys catch us outside. How about that?
You guys can beat up Alex and Mark as much as you want, and I won't press charges.
Oh my God. We should just like, I should get back in shape, and then we should just like challenge other podcasts to like parking lot brawls at cons.
All right,
be the Uwe Boll of podcasts.
Oh man, I think we have a long way to go before we're back in that sort of shape.
Well, we can do it by War Machine weekend.
Can we?
That's a year.
Is it a year?
It's like 9 months.
A little bit less, yeah, nine months.
8 months.
Would that involve me not being in front of the computer all day? Because if it does...
No, you just have to get a standing desk.
Oh yeah, like that's going to solve that problem.
Oh no, one of those balance board desks where you have to balance when you're doing it.
Oh my God.
Or a treadmill desk. Oh my God. Okay.
We're done.
We out.
All right.
Good job.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforto.podcast@gmail.com. We'll be right back.